Please be aware that this episode will cover themes that are often kept silent in our communities. We discuss physical abuse and the painful reality of marital rape. We are sharing these stories to support healing, but we want you to be fully prepared. If this is a triggering topic for you, please pause, skip the episode, or find someone you trust to listen with. Resources for help are available in the show notes. Please take care while listening. Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode.
Sadly, my reaction was I dropped out of school again. I dropped the summer semester.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually my parents even encouraged it as well.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't stop me. They were like, "Huh, fir tu, it's okay. Apne ne paise wapas aayenge summer semester to. Don't worry, we haven't lost that much. We'll just buy you a ticket and go back to India and spend the summer there with him," which is what I did. So that summer, I went back to India. I stayed with him. And that's the summer that I saw who he truly was.
What was he like when you went back? Was he happy that you dropped everything and came back to him?
Yeah, initially he was happy that I was there. And maybe for a little bit, it was, you know, rainbows and sunshine and all that. But I think it started getting out of control. And he just, I don't know if maybe he just kept thinking about what did I do during those few weeks that I was back here in New York without him. And I don't know if that consumed his thoughts. When we weren't at my in-law's house, we would be at one of his friends' houses. He was very close with one of his friends from Ludhiana. And so we would be at this friend's house. And literally, it would be he would dump me at his friend's house to hang out with the guy's mom and his sister. And then him and his boy would up and leave in the car. I have no idea where they would go. I have no idea what they would do. They would be out and about. And, you know, I'm talking about an era where there was not cell phones, and it's India, so it's not like there's pagers or anything. So no GPS to track. I have no clue what's happening, where he is, who he's hanging out with, what he's doing. And I would just spend these hours just sitting in basically a stranger to me in their house until he would come back in the evening. And every time he would come back in the evening, he would be for lack of a better word, lit. Right. Which tells me that he was probably out drinking, hanging out, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And this would happen all the time.
And he wasn't in dental school at the time, or had he completed his studies?
No. So he, you know, it's funny because I don't think I ever wrapped my head around that. I think he had already graduated, or he had finished his last semester already when we were getting married.
Okay.
And so the game plan was that once he gets to the States, right, then you have to take the DOTS here, kind of like the MCATs.
Yeah.
So then he would study here for 2 years to then get his boards or whatever and get certified and start practicing in the States. So he kind of had, I guess, free time. Yeah, he had free time. And they had all, this is post-graduation. And so all of his friends that were there in dental school with him were back home. And they would just hang out.
And did you say anything to him? Did you bring it up to him?
No, I was so naive, Jyoti. In my brain, this is normal. Right?
Yeah.
I didn't think to be oh, I'm allowed to ask him where he's going, who he's going with. Because I never was given a good sense of what a marriage should be. I was never given any guidelines, right? I'm literally 20.
Yeah.
Right? This is I'm not even fully developed or have any sense of any life experience to compare what I'd been thrown into.
Yeah. And you have no confidence. So you're just automatically, if something is off in the relationship, you're thinking it's your fault and you have to fix
it. Absolutely. Yes. Everything was like, I took on the burden of everything. Everything is my fault. I'm the problem. So I have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always this like, well, I'm never going to find anyone again. Who's mm-hmm. going to love me? And so I have to hold on to this no matter how bad it looks.
Yeah.
And so like throughout that summer, just stuff like this kept happening. And we'd always be, for whatever reason, we like never stayed home. We'd always be like on the go at somebody's house. And, you know, the fights did start happening, but the fights would happen because he would, well, later I discovered he would be high. On what? I don't know. Apparently he had issues with drug use.
Substance use.
Of what kind? To date, I don't know.
Okay.
We believe he was very heavily reliant on them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in that era, it was very well known that a lot of the kids that went to boarding school or went away to school, especially like med schools or dental schools or whatever, a lot of these kids would get addicted to drugs, right? Because in those states, they would sell to college students to keep them awake so that they could study.
Okay. Yeah.
It was that era.
Yeah.
Like I remember hearing my cousin who was in medical school in Ludhiana, he would talk about it all the time. Like, oh yeah, a lot of my colleagues are like kids that are in school with me, especially the ones that are from India and stuff, that they all do all sorts of drugs to kind of keep up with everything, stay awake, study. Like that's just the normal. But I was not aware of it at the time when I was in the moment, but I would always notice very weird activity from him.
Mm-hmm.
Like the constant disappearing, just like aggression out of nowhere, bipolar kind of like behavior where one minute like he would be loving and caring and the next minute like cursing me out or yelling at me or, you know, just like causing a fight out of something like thin air or something so small and unnecessary.
Yeah, mountain out of a mole.
Exactly, a mountain out of a mole. And the physical abuse started.
Really? Oh my gosh.
I think, you know, it got to a point where like I would try to like cry myself to sleep. And I didn't, like I knew this wasn't love, but I knew that I couldn't get away from it. And in my brain, like I wouldn't tell my parents what I was experiencing or dealing with, and I'm in India all by myself, 20 years old. I have no clue about life.
How did he even justify it? Like what? I'm sorry, you know, I'd like to think there's a special place reserved for people like that.
You know, I think I like was okay with it because it was never like super harsh, right? It would just be like pushing and shoving or like little slaps. It wasn't anything crazy, but this is crazy that in my brain I'm registering it as like this is permissible.
Yeah.
Even like the emotional abuse was very intense. Like he would always like belittle me and almost like make me feel like I was nothing. And he would always tell me in every fight, like, oh, I didn't want to marry you. My mom made me marry you. I'm so much better looking than you are. You're ugly. So you should be glad that I said yes to you.
What? Oh my gosh.
And like I, you know, and I felt like he was right.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry that you had to deal with that because, first of all, like you're absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, you know? And for someone to say that, and then for you not having the confidence to just put him in his place. I mean, my heart just goes out to the 20-year-old you. Gosh.
I think it also didn't help my confidence because whenever we'd come around like his circle of friends, which was often, his circle did constitute boys and girls, a lot of girls, a lot of pretty girls. And he was a very good looking guy. And all these girls, I remember, would just like make these snickering comments like, oh, yeah, Amin's gorgeous. You're so lucky. You're so lucky. Almost to like it was almost like a poke at me, and sometimes it would leave me this feeling of like, oh, maybe there's something going on or was going on between them, but now he's married to, like, that question would arise from time to time. But again, I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't act on it because I just didn't know better. To me, this is like normal, and I'm the oddball out, right? I'm the outsider coming into like their circle. They all know each other mm-hmm. so well. So I can't speak up. I can't say anything to anyone. Like I just have to roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. And like we would go to that summer, we also went to like a lot of his friends' weddings and we'd show up at these weddings and like, you know, in India, we're talking about like weddings are like by the thousands.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's guests yeah. like in the thousands.
Yeah.
And he would just like disappear into the crowd and I would just be there by myself. Like all alone and like
yeah.
literally trying to like see if I could find him. And then he would like just reappear out of nowhere. Mm. No clue what he was doing, what he was up to. None of that.
And did you ever tell your parents about the physical abuse? You didn't tell anyone? Mm-mm. Not even his parents, his family?
No, I didn't. And I didn't because, like, I don't know why this memory has really stayed with me. I remember one particular night, we were at his chacha's house in, like, Amritsar's shed, and we were staying there. And he had just gotten, like, very aggressive with me and, like, thrown me around and got into a fight. And so I think he had a mobile phone at this point, but like the old school little, mm-hmm. you know, like Nokia handheld. And I went to the rooftop of their house and I called my parents to talk to them. I had to literally stop myself from crying because I didn't mm-hmm. want them to know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling them like, yeah, everything's great. Oh, yeah, we were in Amritsar. We had a great time. I went shopping and then we went here and there. And then at the end, I hang up the phone call. And I remember just again, like I was in the open sky and I just remember looking up at the sky. Mm-hmm. And saying to God, like, why am I going through this? Is this what life is going to be like for me for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell my mom and dad because they spent all of this money for mm-hmm. me to have this wedding here, to bring me here. They're spending all this money to eventually get him to the States and everything that they've done for me. Like, mm-hmm. this would be so shameful for them, right? And mm-hmm. my dad like was very well known in the community because of the work that he does. Mm-hmm. And so it was like inni sharam di gall hogi for my dad and I can't be that person for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like my parents married me off with like good intentions, so mm-hmm. I have to stick it out. And so that day I kind of like told myself, no, you're just gonna shut up and you're just gonna ride through it and like this is it. As these things were happening, I had started to probably create like a defensive wall for myself. And there was probably resentment and hatred, even though I wanted nothing more but for him to love me and treat mm-hmm. me the way I wanted to be treated. But I didn't know what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the toughest things was always at this point, like the sex.
Mm-hmm.
He would, again, come home drunk, high, whatever he was high on and whatever. And I would literally run into bed and pretend to go to sleep.
Mm. Yeah, because you're not getting that love, respect, anything emotional. So you don't feel secure even having a physical relationship with him. Yet you were forced to.
Yeah, I had no option but to perform because that was the expectation. And I don't think that it probably wasn't until recently that I'm like, I realized and I'm like, that would have been considered rape.
He's yeah. like
forcing him.
Yeah.
And I remember I would like go into the bathroom and just cry.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no one to go to and no one that I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like suffocation internally.
Because, you know, that is rape. Even if it's your husband, you know, for anyone that's listening, if it's done without your consent, it's rape. And we should be able to say no. We should be able to talk about it. And there should be repercussions for someone who forces themselves on, even if it's a legally wedded husband. You know, this is your body and only you have the rights to it. I'm sorry that you went through that. And I'm gutted that you didn't have anyone you could talk to about this. You kept this inside all this time.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I kind of had lost any friends that I really had or lost contact with most friends. You know, most of them were like off to college doing what a normal 20-year-old should be doing. And here I was in this situation. I'm in another country.
Yeah.
That I haven't even lived in myself in how many years. You know, I had left India when I was 5.
Yeah.
I'm adjusting to him. I'm adjusting to his family, the lifestyle that we're leading. And
yeah,
I think at this point it was more like just trying to keep appearances up in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think that I had a choice or that I could make a decision or I could walk away.
Mm-hmm. That was stripped from you right from the beginning.
From the beginning, the guilt of like embarrassing my parents, the fact that like, oh, I did something wrong. And therefore, I never looked at it as like, oh, my parents are forcing me to have an arranged marriage, right? I don't think I connected those dots till much later in life. It was more like I made a mistake. And so this is the consequence of that mistake, right?
And the mistake was that I was just
talking to a guy.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that you went through that. Like I was saying, what you experienced was a crime, like full stop. And you know, it was never your fault. I guess what I want to know is, was this the physical part of the relationship always the same? Did you know what you were getting into? Did you have any expectations of what this would look like?
No. So being brought up in this bubble and being this like naive goody two shoe girl, right? Like I had no clue. And like every other desi girl, it's not like my parents sat me down and had a conversation about the birds and the bees or even like about getting my period. Like my mom didn't tell me until like literally the moment that it was happening, that this is happening. And so I was not prepared even for like the intimacy within a marriage wedding night and like what the expectation would be. And I do remember like as this process had started, I remember I was mentioning that like my parents found out that I hung out at the park with that boy that I was talking to, because I do remember that in right before leaving for India. And so my parents did bring it up. And I remember my mom saying to me, and like literally, like my dad left the room, so it could just be me and my mom, for her to ask me, well, are you still a virgin?
Oh my gosh.
And I'm just like, what? Like, how is this even a thought for you?
Yeah.
Like I'm literally with you guys 24/7. I don't do anything. I don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that looks like. Like, how could you even ask me this?
Just because you've talked to this guy.
Right. But like they're automatically assumed that I had lost my virginity because I was talking to a guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at my mom with like tears coming down my face. And I'm like, no, mom, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. But like the look back that I was getting from her was one of like, I don't believe you.
That's sad, because I think it all goes back to never having that trust.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just think they should have had more faith in their upbringing.
Right, because they did a really good job. And people around us would see that, our family, friends, our social circle, right? Like everyone would rave about me and my brother and like what good kids we were being raised in New York, that we were so close to our culture. We were so deeply rooted in being Punjabi and that we spoke Punjabi so well. And, you know, we went to Gurdwara and we partook in like camps, Sikh camps and stuff like that. And so like no one ever had anything bad to say about me and my brother. So it was always such a shame that my parents couldn't see like, yeah, we did a good job with our kids, so we can let them live a little.
Yeah.
You know, and so then this like translates to my wedding night where zero expectation of like zero of what like what to expect, what this is going to look like, how nothing. I'm like freaking out. I literally remember freaking out. And even that night, I remember I'm like, oh my God, just go to sleep, just go to sleep, just go to sleep, just go to sleep, because I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, this is probably going to be TMI, but we all know that our first time is not, you know, like shooting stars and all of this, right? Especially for the girl. Like it's
exactly. It's painful.
Painful.
Let's just say it. Yeah.
It's painful. And so even from that perspective, I was like, this? People enjoy this? Like, that sucks. It hurts. And you have zero experience in it.
Yeah.
And this is the only person. And so even from the start of it, it wasn't something that I looked forward to.
Yeah.
It was just like this painful task.
Well, also, it seems like you hadn't developed the relationship enough to have that emotional connection. Where some, you know, if you have that emotional connection, that love, then this is almost like a natural extension of that.
Of that, 100%.
Because for us women, it's so much more than just sex. Than just
the physical. Yep. Very well said, Chokti. I agree with you. Yeah, so the emotional was not there. And so more of like, a daunting task that I had to do, right? And then fast forward to where we are now, it's all of the other, the abuse, the emotional manipulation, the putting me down, the making me feel less than. And so obviously now I'm far more removed from it than I already was to begin with. But I still have to show up as the wife.
Yeah.
Because then if I don't, then again, I am this horrible, bad person, right? That's saying no to her husband and whatever else he probably would have had to say with that.
I just wonder, did he know that you were talking to someone before you came to India and got married?
You know, I made the mistake of telling him.
Because that just gave him ammunition.
And in my naiveness, and, you know, wanting to like create trust and be an open, honest book. Because I'm pretty sure, you know, he's looking at me like, you're 20 years old. You haven't even finished school. Like, what business do you have getting married?
Yeah.
And so in that conversation, I think I kind of was like, I was talking to this guy and my parents got worried. And so now here we are.
Yeah.
And so that was my downfall.
Well, I mean, you're 20 years old in your defense, you know, and we're also an open book here. We don't hide things, right? I feel for the most part, you know, we're pretty, like growing up in the US, we're pretty direct and we're pretty open when it comes to sharing. And you're not thinking, I mean, this is, you know, now obviously looking back because we have all this life experience and a different perspective on it. But at the time, you didn't know that sharing this information, it's going to come back and bite you.
Yeah, I did it with more of a
good faith.
Good faith that he's going to say, okay, she's telling me the truth. So it was like building that trust of like, all right, we can trust each other. And that he wasn't going to necessarily judge me for it and see that I'm, you know, trying to like bridge this sort of gap or what have you between us.
Yeah.
I'm sure that probably caused damage.
So you're going through this relationship. You're in a different country. You're not telling your parents. You haven't told his parents. So at this point, you're in it 100%. You're giving it your all. At what point did you realize, like, no, this is not going to work?
That point never came.
Really?
That point never came. I kept pushing through, went through the summer. I was coming back to New York finally in September, right? Because the school semester is going to start. I'm supposed to pick up where I left off. And at this point, we've put in like the immigration paperwork. So that's like moving along. So I come back to the States. I go back to school. He was supposed to have his visa interview on September 11th, 2001.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Wow.
So he's in Delhi. I'm literally sitting in class watching the Twin Towers coming down. Right. I remember I was in one of my like math classes in school and college. And like we're getting these news that these towers are coming down. And so they dismiss us from school and I'm running home. And that's when like I get home and my dad's like, oh yeah, I got a call from India. Aman's interview got canceled, obviously, because they shut down all the embassies. And so he didn't get his visa at that time. And that's when more abuse started. Because then this crazy man literally had the audacity to tell me,
Stop.
I was making this up. But literally blamed 9/11 and said that I had something to do with it so that the embassy would shut down. So
get
his visa to come to the States.
Sandeep, if there was a red flag knocking at you, like, if that wasn't it.
Yeah. Listen, I 100% agree with you. And sadly, this is just how, programmed my brain was.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it just goes to speak volumes as to what your mindset was at that point, where you were at, the lack of confidence, the lack of self-respect.
Self-worth, none of it. None of it.
Yeah. So then eventually he
got here. He got his visa. He came. He made it on around Christmas time that year. So just 2 months later, he was here in the States. Mm-hmm. We're living with my parents, of course. I'm a college kid. He was a dentist by profession. But if you guys know anything about being a dentist from another country, you have to take the DATS, which are the equivalent.
It's a long process here.
Right. Yeah. And you have to go to school for 2 years and kind of get certified here and stuff like that. So he was supposed to be studying to take the DATS to then get admission into a dental school here. So we're living with my parents. They're supporting us. We're living with my brother as well. We're all in the same house, kind of basically moved into my childhood bedroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess once he came here to New York, he, first of all, the insecurities and his behavior patterns were just so crazy. He would go with me to school, to my classes,
mm-hmm.
and sit outside of my halls, of my lecture halls.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Every day?
Every day.
Every class?
Every class. He would move with me to the next class, sit outside of my lecture hall, and then we'd go to the next class. Then, at the time, I was also working part-time as a pharmacy technician, and the days that I would have work, he would come with me to work, and in the pharmacy, you know how they have the chair where you could do your blood pressure? Mm-hmm. He would literally sit in that chair my entire shift.
Really? Nobody said anything to him? Sir, you can't be sitting
my,
here?
My coworkers, my pharmacist at the time, he would be like, his name was Jose. He was the nicest Cuban guy. And he'd be like, bro, this is not normal.
Yeah.
But he knew my cultural kind of circumstances and, kind of knew what I had been dealing with. So he wouldn't say anything to me, tell him to get out of here. But he would be like, this is not good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that went on. And then I think that's when we started picking up on the fact that he had a substance abuse issue. That's mm-hmm. when my parents started questioning it.
Okay. Because
he started showing signs of withdrawal symptoms.
Oh, because he wasn't getting his supply here.
Mm-hmm. So obviously the lashing out against mm-hmm. me and unnecessary arguments and fights just got more and more severe. We're in my parents' house, so now they're becoming privy to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day my mom actually found 5 bottles of cough syrup empty behind my bed.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So right? He was...
And when he would come with me to work at the pharmacy, he would get up and walk around. And apparently at that time, what he was doing was he would be in the over-the-counter aisles, going through the products and reading the ingredients.
Oh, my gosh.
And since he's a dentist, he obviously knew which ingredients would hit and whatever, right?
Give him that high.
Yeah. And so he was just constantly buying cough syrups. And my mom had noticed, right? She had noticed at some point, Aman, why are you buying so much cough syrup? You don't have a cough. And he would be like, nay, nay, mommy, my throat or whatever, right? He would make up some excuse.
Yeah.
And constantly just cough syrup. And so she found a bunch of empty bottles.
Mm.
and, you know, the other physical signs of like the fidgetiness and like, you know, all of that. And so she'd be like, I think he does drugs or he like nashe karta hai.
Yeah.
And he's not getting it. And then like, obviously whenever fights would happen, they would like try to calm me down and be like, oh, you know, main lagda hai nashe karta hai. So hon in with him mil nahi raha. And so now he's like overreacting, like try to stay calm and just manage, you know, his emotions and stuff like that. And I think my parents called his parents back home a few times and were like, hey, listen, like at this point, like obviously the kids are married. They've been together. We did this whole process, but we think like your son was doing drugs when he was in India. Like, are you guys aware of this? And if you are, like, can you guys be straightforward at this point? Tell us the truth, because like then we can all work together to get him help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Type of thing, right? Like, we just want the kids to be okay. We want them to be happy, create their lives. Like, he's here, she's here, she's going to college, he's eventually going to go to college. Like my, to my parents, it was like they have a potential to create this beautiful life in the future.
Yeah.
And so let's all rally around them and let's get there.
Yeah.
And his parents would be like, no, 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 no.
Denial, of course.
It's a complete denial.
Yeah.
And it was so severe to the point where my dad actually had my Tayaji go all the way to Bihar, which
to his dental school.
To dental school to then almost like bribe people and be like, what information do you know about him? And that's when we discovered that he has like this insane history of like psychological issues, and acts out and he does do a lot of drugs. He's very dependent on them. And that all he does is like hangs out, and they're talking about like his sexual needs and stuff like that, that he's been caught with multiple women in the hostels. And I'm like,
how like, I wish they had done this before you got married. To me, it seems like that should have been
the first
verified
step.
First step before even, you know, proceeding with the marriage and whatnot. Wow. And so once your dad gets this information, did he still want you to stick it out?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think,
you know. What was his thought process? Like, you know, I'm assuming they knew that he was following you to class. He was there.
Yeah, they were fully aware that he would go with me.
And they were okay with this?
My parents' mindset was like, we don't want to bother him too much, or we don't want to make him feel like, oh, which like he had kind of made comments to, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, he was so emotionally smart, like the emotional manipulation, he was so smart and slick with it that he would like make comments like, oh, don't think we met at the like, or whatever, right? Like things along those lines. And so my parents were like intentional to ensure that they don't make him feel that way, right? Like, okay, yes, you're living with us, we're supporting you, but like, we don't want to bruise your ego or anything in any way, so that you take care of our daughter and do all of the things that you need to do. So I think my parents' approach was more like, all right, we have this information, they're married, he's here, how do we like solve the problem?
Yeah.
In the sense of like, should we get him help, whatever. And I mean, I think a lot of this I've blocked out at this point, so I can't recall if my parents did or didn't confront him about it. But basically, long story short, like things just started spiraling more and more out of control because he wasn't kind of getting his hit. And so his withdrawals were just getting more intense and his behavior just got more intense, and it became very emotional abuse. The physical abuse got worse. And now at this point, I am 3 months pregnant. Right. I was pregnant when I came back from India that summer in September when I got back. That's when I found out.
Yeah.
And so that was the other kind of puzzle piece, right? Is that, okay, well, she's pregnant, so we can't let this fall apart, because then she's going to be a single mom.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So it's all you can imagine, the more reason for you to stay in this marriage now.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that the stuff kind of kept happening and getting out of control. And, you know, I think this is the day that's like forever marked deep in my memory, and I don't know if it'll ever leave me, but Super Bowl Sunday of 2002,
mm-hmm.
my cousin and her husband are over at our house to watch the Super Bowl. We're all downstairs in the family room, and my husband decided to go and lock himself in our bedroom, even though we have, you know, like family over. And my cousin and her husband came really just to hang out with him and spend time with him because mm-hmm. they couldn't make it to the wedding. Mm-hmm. And he's up there hiding. So my parents are like, go get him. Mm-hmm. So I go upstairs to the room and I'm like, hey, you know, they're all here. Everyone wants to hang out. It's Super Bowl Sunday. It's like a big tradition in American culture. Like we watch football, we eat food, whatever, whatever. Come downstairs. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. And he's like in the room pretending to like be doing his studying for the dads with his okay. book. And he's like, no, I have to study. And I'm like, it's Sunday night. Like, it's fine. Yeah. Just come downstairs. We have guests over. You can do that tomorrow morning, like when I go to class or whatever.
Yeah.
No. Gets into this huge fight with me. And I can't recall, but he pushed me, he shoved me, and I can't recall if he like punched me in my face or if he hit me, but I basically remember hitting my closet door, falling to the ground. And I'm 3 months pregnant. That's when I have like the tiniest little belly.
Yeah.
And there's just like blood all over my shirt, on my t-shirt, like my dripping down my nose. And my parents heard the thud when I hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come running upstairs. He has the bedroom door locked. And so they're like knocking on the door. What's going on? And they could hear him like yelling and screaming at me. I'm crying at this point, you know, mm-hmm. severely mm-hmm. crying. And so they finally get him to open the door. And there I am in like this bloody shirt with like blood coming down my nose. Mm-hmm. And he's just in this corner. And so my brother like runs in and is about to be like, fuck did you do to my sister? Like, what's yeah. happening here?
Yeah.
And so both my jija and my dad like had to hold my brother like, no. Like, we can't turn this into like a physical altercation, right? What's going mm-hmm. on?
Mm-hmm.
And that, Jyoti, was sadly the turning point.
Thank you for listening to Rue. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at ruhdaraz@gmail.com. That's ruhdaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.